The Bitcoin Standard Toolkit is a selection of Bitcoin services I recommend to my readers and learners on SaferDean.com as they upgrade their monetary operating system from the fiat standard to the Bitcoin standard. These companies are NYDIG, a leading full-service financial services firm dedicated to Bitcoin, applying institutional wisdom and ingenuity to help clients access the unrealized potential of this emerging asset class. NYDIG offers the full suite of solutions needed for financial institutions to access Bitcoin, including custody, execution, financing, treasury solutions, integration partnerships, and more. The team behind NYDIG brings decades of experience in the financial markets and passion for sound money to help provide the rails that will bring about a move to the Bitcoin standard. I have been working as a consultant for NYDIG for 2 years now, and I'm very impressed with their vision, focus, and execution. Go to NYDIG.com to learn more. CipherSafe. To secure your Bitcoins, it is important to keep your seed phrase backed up safely, and for that, I highly recommend using the CipherWheel Seed Storage Device, a gorgeous and brilliant sturdy piece of low-time preference engineering from a fourth-generation machine shop in Maine. The CipherWheel is machined from solid stainless steel, and its unique and elegant design is inspired by secret decoder rings, as well as legendary mechanical engineer Franz Rouleau and the golden age of machine design. If you've read the Bitcoin Standard, you'll know I think the late 19th century was a golden age for many facets of human advancement because of hard money. Bitcoin is bringing hard money back, and our friends at CipherSafe are giving Bitcoin the low-time preference machines it deserves from the golden age of design. Go to CipherSafe.io to get the CipherWheel for your Bitcoins. OKCoin. Whenever someone asks me how to invest in Bitcoin, my advice is to accumulate Bitcoins periodically for the long run, or what is called dollar cost averaging. When you buy every day, week, or month, you channel Bitcoin's volatility to your advantage. In the long run, this strategy will outperform every other Bitcoin investment strategy, probably, except for amazing luck, perhaps. The best place to do recurring purchases is OKCoin because they have the lowest fees for recurring Bitcoin purchases you will find anywhere. If you're stacking sats for the long run, every sat matters, and the fees with each purchase will add up. That's why I recommend you buy at the lowest cost possible from OKCoin. OKCoin is also the Bitcoin exchange available in the most countries around the world, so it will hopefully be accessible for you wherever you are. Go to OKCoin.com to get started with your stacking. Nodal 1. As discussed in the Bitcoin Standard, Bitcoin is controlled by the nodes that operate its software. It is only through consensus between nodes that the Bitcoin blockchain continues to live, and it is only by running a Bitcoin node that you are part of this consensus and can verify the validity of the transactions you receive and the ownership of your coins. Whenever anyone asks me what are the most important warning signs that something is wrong with Bitcoin, I always answer the following. If the number of Bitcoin nodes is declining, and or the cost of running a node is rising significantly. I believe it is really important to run a node, but I don't recommend running it on your work or personal computer as it can compromise the performance of your computer and, more importantly, the security and privacy of your Bitcoin node. A far better solution is to buy a dedicated hardware node, and for that, I highly recommend Nodal. Manage all your Bitcoin activity, such as Lightning or BTC Pay server, and isolate them from your personal computer by putting them into one dedicated device that is always running and does one thing only, Bitcoin. Become a first-class Bitcoin citizen by running your own Nodal node, available at nodal.it, and that's spelled N-O-D-L.it. Finally, Cold Card. My hardware wallet of choice is the Cold Card. I strongly recommend only conducting Bitcoin trades on computers that are dedicated to Bitcoin and cannot connect to the internet. I like the Cold Card because it is a contained machine optimized for Bitcoin and Bitcoin only. Cold Card is basically a small computer that can only do Bitcoin, which makes securing it more straightforward. Use the code BitcoinStandard on coldcardwallet.com to get a 5% discount. Hello and welcome to the Bitcoin Standard podcast seminar. In today's seminar, I'm going to be discussing the main ideas of my next book, The Fiat Standard. After having worked on this book for the last 2 years, I finally think it is ready to start being published. And I'm publishing this book differently from the traditional publishing model. I will first going to be sending out individual chapters of this book to subscribers every 2 weeks before the book is published in physical form. You can subscribe to receive chapters of my next book, The Fiat Standard, by signing up on SaferDean.com. And when you sign up, you also get chapters from my other book that I'm working on, the economics textbook, Principles of Economics, which is also going to be completed around the same time as the Fiat Standard. The two books have approximately 48 chapters between them, which you'll be getting one chapter a week over the coming year. When you sign up, you also get full access to all four of my online courses, Economics 11 and Economics 12, Principles of Economics 1 and 2, also, Economics 21, the Bitcoin Standard, the course that is built on, that is based on the Bitcoin Standard book, and Economics 31, the
the course that is called Hard Questions on Hard Money. And this is the course that effectively formed the basis for the fiat standard. The material that is in that course was over time to develop into what I have written now as the fiat standard. And joining as a member also allows you to join the forum to discuss my books and my courses with others. And all of this is for a flat fee of $100 or $15 per month. And if you would like to join this seminar, if you want to be able to join the live discussion seminar, you can subscribe to that by having one flat fee of $200 for a year or $15 for a month. So go to saifeddin.com and check out what is on offer. You can also read the first chapter of the Fiat Standard over there and the first chapter of Principles of Economics. And it'll give you a good idea about what is in the book. And hopefully you will sign up and you will enjoy these. The Fiat Standard is essentially modeled after the Bitcoin Standard. And it is the sequel to the Bitcoin Standard. It continues really where the Bitcoin Standard left off. But as opposed to the Bitcoin Standard, it's studying the operation of Bitcoin. The Fiat Standard focuses on the operation of fiat. And really, the book was modeled after the Bitcoin Standard in almost like a parody. Well, not a parody, but almost like an imitation, in that I heard from a lot of people that they liked and enjoyed the way in which I explained Bitcoin. And so I just decided, why not try and apply that same way? If it can work for Bitcoin, it should work for fiat, for explaining and understanding how fiat came about. And so I looked at fiat from an engineering perspective, tried to understand how the network of fiat works and try and understand what the implications of it are. And in a sense, you know, I think there's a lot of clarity that can be obtained from studying fiat with a Bitcoin lens, because Bitcoin is effectively a more advanced technology, the way that I see it. And being a more advanced technology makes it easier to understand how the more primitive technology works. In other words, if you know how to work a computer, it's easy to explain to you what an abacus is. But if you only know how to work an abacus, it's very hard to explain to you what a computer is. So I think if you've understood how Bitcoin works, you've understood the most important and basic building blocks of what makes something function as a money and as a payment system, because Bitcoin has been doing this, it's functioning and it's working. And so it can be, you can see what the basic constituents and what the basic building blocks of it are. And then applying that lens to fiat allows you to see exactly how fiat works. And so fiat also has a mining process, and fiat has it has a supply, which is just like with Bitcoin, but there are different ways of determining the supply. So I looked at fiat as if you were looking at a Bitcoin competitor, as if we were looking at an altcoin, and we were trying to find what are the specs of this altcoin and how do they compare to Bitcoin. And, you know, I've been writing this book for about 2 years now. I've been studying this question from that lens for about 2 years, getting into the underlying technology behind fiat. And I think the insights that you get from it are quite useful when you look at it this way. So all of that really makes me think that the book is worth reading as a kind of manual for navigating the fiat world and the fiat standard. And even though you, as a Bitcoiner, if you're a Bitcoiner, you may have completely upgraded and moved away from the fiat standard, unfortunately, no matter where you are in the world right now, you are surrounded by people who run on the fiat standard, and you need them to survive. And so you need to be navigating the fiat standard. You're going to have to be dealing with the fiat world for quite a while. And so this is really my attempt to help you navigate and understand fiat. If you thought that my book helped you understand and think about Bitcoin, well, then I hope you will enjoy the fiat standard. And I'm going to go through a little bit of an overview of the topics of the book and the main ideas in the book. And so the book begins by the first chapter is an introduction. The first chapter is going to be available for free, is available for free now. If you go to saifeddin.com, you'll be able to find and read the whole first chapter, which gives a little bit of an introduction to the book. And in the second chapter, after that, we begin by introducing the birth of the fiat standard. And in the same way that you know, there was the Satoshi Nakamoto announcement of building Bitcoin on the cryptography mailing list, I find the equivalent of the fiat standards announcement when the His Majesty's government in England essentially told the people of England to stop using gold coins, hand over all their gold coins, pay to the post office in gold, and take payment in checks and notes instead of gold, and use notes rather than gold for payment of wages and cash disbursements generally. So I dig up this quote, and it's a fascinating. I found this new history of how the Bank of England was managing the currency at that time, and it's actually quite interesting and fascinating and telling about the development of how fiat works, because you see the hallmarks of the development of fiat from the first week, effectively, of the announcement of the fiat standard, of the announcement of moving away from gold. And for me, I think this was really significant, because England, of course, was the operator of the world's reserve currency. And it's a big deal when their currency stopped being redeemable in gold, and when the people who were using it stopped being able to redeem it. Well, I mean, it wasn't irredeemable. They didn't quite suspend redeemability. That was still to take some time. So we follow the progress of how we started off from, you know, don't take coins from the post office and pay in coins in the post office and newspapers because of the war. We start off with that, and then we end up with what we have today, gradually, you know, one step at a time. Incidentally, if you are listening to the podcast, you can access the video of me going through the book and the book's draft right now, which is what I'm doing right now, on the seminar pages. If you're a member on saifeddin.com, you go to the seminar page and you'll be able to find the video of this podcast, and you can see the book draft as I scroll through it. So we begin with a little bit of a history on just how it has developed, but the book is not a history book. The history is just provided for context, really. But the main analysis fundamentally concerns, I'd say, the technical side of the fiat standard, the technical and economic side. So we begin by really examining what I like to call the underlying technology behind fiat. And the underlying technology behind fiat, in my mind, is simply, well, I shouldn't say simply because there's nothing simple about it. But in my mind, if I were to boil it down to its essence, I'd say it's the fact that the fiat standard, in order to operate a payment network, in order to make your country, people in your country able to trade with others around the world, the fiat standard requires you to run this software implementation, or hardware implementation, really, where there's a central bank, and that central bank has four monopolies. And understanding those four monopolies And what they do with their cash balance is really what explains how fiat works. Because what ends up happening is that everybody's money in the country, or the vast majority of everybody's money, about 90%, which is the digital fiat, is placed on the fiat payment network. And then that fiat payment network node is the central bank, and the central bank is using that money for, you know, it's the money that backs all the banks, and it is the money that also settles international trade, and it is the money that is buying government bonds, and it is the money that backs the currency. In most countries, they're using foreign reserves, and then they issue their own currency. And it's if you think about it this way, like if you were looking at a shitcoin and somebody came and told you, all right, we're going to be implementing this thing where we're putting all of the money for everything together in the same pot and trusting these monopolists to manage it, and we're not going to, you know, the governance protocol is you just basically get to vote once every 4 years for somebody who may or may not have some kind of influence on appointing this person. But we need to have this common pot that includes everything, and we need it all. We need it all basically in the same hands. And effectively, this is really the only way that fiat works operationally. But you can imagine the dangers of this. And I think if you start thinking about it this way, that you can see the risks and the failure modes of fiat very vividly. And so this is really how we begin. And so this network of fiat nodes, really there are 200 fiat nodes around the world, but really only one of them is a full node, and that is the U.S. Federal Reserve, because it is the only node that is able to validate transactions. It's the only node that can validate transactions ultimately, because all the other nodes, they are, you could call them SPV nodes, simple payment verification nodes, where they verify payments between parties. But the validating node, the Federal Reserve, is the only one that it can always overrule what any of the SPV nodes and any of their private bank nodes will issue. So the only node that is sovereign in the fiat system is the U.S. Federal Reserve, and they can basically, essentially, and of course, you know, this is Bitcoin fiat is an implementation of what I like to call centralized ledger technology. It's really one ledger. There's only one ledger, which is with the one node, and that one node decides what ends up happening with all transactions. There's always going, scorekeeper technology, as Max is calling it. That's a good way of putting it. So it's basically, it's that one node that runs the payment network, and it validates everything, and it decides what happens with the supply. That's the underlying technology behind it. And then in the next chapter, I look at fiat mining and the fiat supply. If you try and understand how the fiat supply works, it's, you know, if you think Bitcoin's complicated, like it makes Bitcoin so simple. Obviously, the supply is the simplest part of Bitcoin, but because it's just a very simple function where you can express it mathematically very easily. In the fiat standard, nobody knows what the supply is for any of the fiat coins at any point in time. You simply can't know a definitive answer, because there's a very ambiguous line between what is a fiat token, because ultimately the fiat network's token is debt. I think people have a misconception that fiat is paper money. Most people think that fiat is paper money, but in reality, fiat is a digital implementation of money. The majority of fiat money is digital. It exists only on the centralized ledger and all of these distributed ledgers. And only a small part of it is printed out into pieces of paper. And it's a growingly smaller and smaller part of it that is declining. And the way that the mining process in fiat works is that you mine fiat every time you issue a loan. Anybody who's able to lend money is effectively on anybody who is able to lend money guaranteed by the central bank, guaranteed by the fiat standards node, by their local node, is effectively issuing new money. And that's really what their mining process looks like. Anybody issues a loan, new coins come into existence. Anybody pays off a loan, coins go out of existence. And also, anybody defaults on a loan, coins go out of existence. So it's an extremely, extremely complicated and primitive way of running it. It's like a very, very complicated machine. And when you look at modern technology, it just it seems far easier and simpler and cleaner in Bitcoin. And the result of this insanity with the money supply is that the money supply in fiat is constantly rising and dropping. And it rises and drops in cycles. And that's what creates the credit cycles, really. And if you think about it this way, I think beginning from first principles and thinking about fiat from first principles will lead you to an intuitive understanding of the business cycle. Because if you think about, you know, if you know that Bitcoin exists, again, as I was saying earlier, if you know how a computer works, it's simpler to explain to you what an abacus does. But it's much harder to do it the other way around. If you know how an abacus works, it's hard to figure out how a computer works. Now, if you know how the Bitcoin computer works in terms of its supply, you realize, you know, the coins need to be moved around every 10 minutes and the ownership of the coins needs to be moved around. There's no reason for the coins to continue to grow infinitely. And so if you cap the supply, that's fine. But also, you know that there's no reason for the supply to be so unstable. Like, there's no good reason for the supply to rise and drop, and the price of the money can adjust without the quantity having to adjust. And you know, obviously Bitcoin is volatile now because it's not yet dominant as money, but if it was a dominant money, it would be it would not be volatile. It would move very slightly because it would be so big. But in any case, you know, there's no reason why the money supply should rise and drop. And when you think about it, what, you know, if you start from the sane engineering of having a fixed number of beads in your payment system, and so that anybody knows how many beads they have versus how many beads exist overall, if you start from that sane starting point and then move on to the and you think, all right, we have a system where we're running with this. And then you try and add a scenario where these beads, their supply increases and decreases haphazardly. And then try and imagine what happens. I think that's probably a very good way of arriving at the Austrian business cycle theory on your own. Because that's basically what the Austrian business cycle theory is. Mm-hmm. In that it says that it's the manipulation and the instability in the money supply and the price of money that causes these that causes people to make erroneous calculations. People think they have more money than they actually have. People think that the value of the money that they have is larger than it actually is, and so they carry out malinvestments, and that leads to the prices of goods rising and then crashing. And then when you get the crash, you know, because the money supply is rising and dropping, the economic cycle is determined by the presence of money. And so when you have an inflationary period, you're getting all these crashes. And then, you're getting this boom. And so the money's being created, business is booming, credit is booming. And then when that turns around, you get the opposite, which is the whole thing starts falling apart. And so the money supply collapses and the money supply drops. And so it has a system. And so, you know, in that situation, of course, what ends up happening is that the fiat standard operators, the node, the fiat nodes, will step in and start creating more fiat to make up for the fiat that's going bankrupt in order to prevent the fiat banks from becoming illiquid. And so this is effectively what's been going on in world financial markets for the last 10, 12 years, where central banks are just providing infinite liquidity to prevent the liquidation of financial institutions that are illiquid. And effectively, you know, this is, I hope to use this part of the book to explain why this is, and to illustrate why this is a consequence of the primitive way of running the supply. Then the next chapter discusses fiat nodes, how basically who gets to operate a node in the fiat standard, and it explains the difference between the full node and the smaller and the SPV nodes and the banks and what they do, and essentially how this has reflected on global development and growth around the world. And then in chapter six, we discuss fiat balances. And one unique property of the fiat system, of all the monetary systems that we've seen, you know, we've discussed several in the Bitcoin standard. There's gold and rhizostones and silver and seashells. Fiat is unique in that the majority of people holding fiat actually have negative balances in fiat. People generally have a negative balance of fiat. And so the way this system operates is that everybody runs a negative balance, but effectively they're paying each other from the future. And as a result, everybody is in debt. And one key concept in the book is essentially, you know, in the subtitle of the book is the fiat standard is the debt slavery alternative to human civilization, is that one side effect of the fiat standard is that everybody ends up being in debt in this world, because making debt is mining new coins. Making debt is, you know, getting into debt allows somebody to mine new coins. If you buy your house on debt, someone is issuing new fiat. And so they can give you a better deal. You can basically get a better deal if you're able to buy your house and mine fiat rather than just buy your house. And that's why nobody buys their house with cash. Everybody takes out loans. And that's why, and that I think applies all across. In my mind, this is what creates, this is why everybody is in debt. This is why there's so much debt, because debt is essentially, it has a mining reward attached to it. Every time you get into debt, there's a mining reward attached to it. And so people always have an incentive to get into more debt. And this is how it works operationally. And then the last chapter in the first part of the book is, what is fiat good for? So now that we've studied how it works operationally, well, what is this thing good for? And the answer is, the first one, really, this is, I think, maybe the most significant conceptual framework in the book, in my mind, is the most important concept around which the analysis of this book takes place, is the concept of salability across space. In the Bitcoin standard, we focused on salability across time in order to illustrate Bitcoin's value proposition. And so I looked at how salability across time works with different monies, and that if a money has a high stock-to-flow ratio, it becomes hard for people to inflate its supply, and therefore it becomes hard for it to lose its value, and so it maintains its value better over time. And that's what ended up, in my mind, giving Bitcoin its, giving gold its monetary role. Gold is the best for salability across time, because you hold on to gold, and 10 years later, there's only very little new gold that has been produced. Your share of the gold stockpile has not been diluted a lot as much as other kinds of coins. So this is effectively what ends up making gold money. And that's what is very interesting about Bitcoin. And that is really what is the underlying driver of Bitcoin's number go up technology. You know, the reason Bitcoin's price shoots up so quickly all the time is, in my mind, it's because it has a high stock to flow ratio. And so it's very hard for people to bring in large amounts of coins in response to this. To these increases in demand, and so that's why the price rises. Now, trying to explain fiat, as I was writing the book about fiat, the more that I thought about it, the more that I realized, really, fiat does have an equivalent important feature in it that makes it so very useful. And for, you know, I can't just be negative about the thing. I have to just admit, even for, you know, even though I don't like fiat, but I think we all have to admit that in reality, it solves the saleability problem better than gold across space. And so gold is highly saleable across time, but fiat is highly saleable across space. It's much more saleable across space than gold. So if you want to send gold across the Atlantic, it's really expensive and it's really risky. Well, not really risky, but there is a risk that the boat could sink. And if the boat sinks, the gold is gone. So it's enormously expensive. Whereas with fiat, you know, having one central bank running a world payment system means that any payment can be basically done at the speed of light. But of course, it takes a little bit longer to settle, to make final settlement for most payments, because they need to check things. But effectively, you know, when you no longer need to move anything physical, you gain a lot of saleability across space. And that's really the advantage of the fiat standard. So we may not be fans, but we have to admit that this is a cool feature in fiat. This is what makes it work. This is what allows it to work in spite of all the other fatal flaws that it has. Well, I shouldn't be saying fatal, because they have, it still works. And I think when you think about it this way, you know, as somebody who believes in gold, you would be likely to think, well, you know, governments shouldn't use their own payment systems without gold, and that they should build a payment system around gold. Sounds nice as an idea, except that, you know, well, you can't force them to, and you can't get around them, because you can't be setting up physical clearance of gold. You can't be traveling every time you want to spend gold. You can't physically move gold yourself. That would be really expensive. And you can't set up clearance mechanisms for gold. You can't set up gold banks without having government be on top of you, basically. That's just the engineering reality of how gold works. And so that means that ultimately it's the payment network that matters in a modern economy. And so, because people want to trade across space a lot, this is ultimately what gives fiat the advantage that allows it to continue for so long, even though a harder money like gold has been around for 100 years. You still can't see a spontaneous free market monetary system built around gold emerge, because you can't install that kind of fast saleability on gold that kind of salability across space on gold without government. That's the sad reality. You're going to need a bank, and you're going to need gold vaults, and you're not going to need ways of physically moving gold around. And that's just very vulnerable to physical attack. And that just makes it inevitable that somebody's going to be taking that over effectively and using it. So that's really, in my mind, why fiat, being fair about it and thinking about it as an as a system, trying to understand the economics of it, you can't help but notice that, yes, it does have this advantage. Once you give the entire money supply in the hands of government, you do get a higher TPS. You get a higher transaction per second than you would on gold. There are undeniable efficiency improvements involved. So that's really the first thing that fiat is good for. The second thing that I think fiat is good for is, of course, financing government. Fiat basically allows governments to, once they are in charge of the payment network and they are in charge of the giant pot of foreign reserve currencies, or if they issue the reserve currency themselves, then they can always finance themselves by just making more tokens for their own network. So whatever is being sold and bought on their network is theirs, basically, because they can just... Whatever's being sold and bought on their network is theirs because they can just make more tokens to buy more of this stuff. That ends up being more of a curse than a blessing, of course, because that means that government no longer has to work for its money, and it doesn't really need the legitimacy and cooperation of its people as much as it would in a world in which it had to earn its money from its people, in which the tokens on the payment network are not issued by the government, are not issued by the fiat node. And so that's really the second major advantage of it. And then the third one is that it is good for banks. It's good for governments to be able to, it's good for banks because it allows governments to bail them out when there's a problem. But of course, that then develops into a huge dependency problem. And it might sound like it's a good in principle that, hey, nobody likes bank failures, right? So wouldn't it be great if the government had a way of preventing bank failures? Obviously it would. But, there are downsides and consequences to such things. So that's my view on what fiat is good for. The second part of the book looks at all of these issues of fiat life, what I like to call fiat life, which is what I argue is a distorted way in which we see reality, caused by the fact that we use such a monetary system. And in particular, I think, the real drawbacks of fiat have been that, okay, it has given us more salability across space, but it has taken away salability across time. And so we sacrifice our ability to move value into the future in order to be able to move it around faster in the present. And so as a result, because of that, effectively, fiat is driving a de-civilization process, because the process of civilization is inextricably linked to the development of a market, and the development of market is inextricably linked and dependent on the development of a medium of exchange, of the development of money that allows for large-scale trade and anonymous trade between people who don't need to have strong relationships with one another, and it allows for it allows for saving. Once you have money, once you have a thing that you can use as money, you start saving. And as time has gone on, we've managed to make a harder and harder money. We've progressively made our monies harder and harder because just through the process of monetary competition, we're always, the stronger money is always eating the weaker money. And that's allowing us to lower our time preference because it's allowing us to save more into the future. And it's allowing us to have a lower and lower time preference for the future. And therefore, it allows us to accumulate more capital, to save more and to invest more. And this is really what Hoppe calls the process of civilization. It's the process of the lowering of interest rates and the lowering of time preference as people save more, accumulate more, think more about the future, and become more civilized, more peaceful. And fiat effectively reverses that because it downgrades our ability to have a store of value that is stable into the future, and therefore it makes it harder for us to think about the future. So we start thinking less and less about the future versus the present, and then therefore that I think reflects terribly on several issues, but also it leads to massive distortions. And then there's the other aspect of the distortion, which is all the things that governments distort by having this infinite printer. You know, if you may remember that interview with Neil Kashkari with his giant eyes bulging saying we have infinite cash. You know, it's infinite for them, but the price and the cost to the rest of society is also infinite. Nothing is free, and so everything has a cost. And so the ability of fiat to just finance government intervention in all kinds of aspects has a massive negative impact. And I'm going to have a few chapters that look into these things on time preference, family, food, education, science, health, fuels, our energy, and finally, finally security. So this is these are the the first two parts of the book on the fiat standard. So the first part is looking at it technically, and then the second part looks at fiat life and the consequences of fiat. And then the third part of the book is the Bitcoin part of the book. Enter Bitcoin, you know, the hero in the knight in shining armor comes in to save us from all of the previous stuff. And basically, you know, before people start mocking, I will take the initiative and make fun of myself and summarize this entire book in a few words for you. Everything I hate is caused by fiat and fixed by Bitcoin is probably a decent summary of what this book is. I've just saved you from having to buy it. Yes, you can make that joke, but also you can also read the book and see if you can see if it doesn't convince you. You may not agree with everything, but you know, hopefully at least you'll learn something if you read all of these ideas. So I think the amazing thing about Bitcoin is ultimately it fixes this because it allows us to have gold's spatial salability across time, gold's high salability across time, and fiat's high salability across space. And that's why it is such an enormous deal in my mind. And so really this book is a sequel to the Bitcoin standard, because the Bitcoin standard was all about how Bitcoin's intertemporal salability makes it the hardest money ever. And that's really amazing. But this one looks at its interspatial salability across space, and how the how this framework, this conceptual framework of salability across space, both helps us understand the emergence of fiat and also helps us understand the prospects for Bitcoin to succeed or fail. Because ultimately, this is what it comes down to. Bitcoin salability across space is what determines whether Bitcoin can survive or not. Bitcoin salability across space is what determines whether the network is going to be able, whether the network can survive attack, whether the network can survive in terms of its security. This is an enormously important implication. And so if we end up with a world in which, let's say, for whatever reasons, we're only able to have, say, 20 Bitcoin full nodes that have to pay a $1 million transaction to conduct, say, 100 transactions on chain every day, if through some engineering freak, we end up with this being the state of the Bitcoin network, that we would have I'm sorry, I just got a little bit distracted with reading Max's comment, but I'll get to Max in a bit. But I was saying, in the Bitcoin network, if we're going to, I'm sorry, what was it that I, where was I? I lost my train of thought.
You were saying about Bitcoin potentially having 20 fiat nodes.
Yes.
Nodes around the world.
Yes, thanks. So yes, if we end up through some freak of engineering, we end up with a world in which we only have 20 Bitcoin nodes and 100 on-chain transactions per day. In that kind of world, I think Bitcoin is going to have very low spatial salability, because it's extremely expensive to send the transactions and there's only a very limited amount on them. And I think that would make it easy to attack and compromise Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's success depends on having a highly resilient network that is distributed and that allows us to make a lot of cheap transactions all over the world through the day. Now, that does not mean, and that's where I get what I get into in the chapter 17 on scaling, that does not mean that we need every coffee to be on the blockchain, as one of these sections of chapter 16 says, is entitled "Screw Your Coffee." There's no need for individual consumer transactions to be on chain in order for Bitcoin to have that level of salability. I think what's going to happen is that the Bitcoin transactions that we need Bitcoin to stay saleable, to stay cheap enough for there to be hundreds of thousands of daily settlement transactions that can be conducted across long distances. We don't need to go all the way to recording every single coffee on chain. So I think there's, there's the security aspect of Bitcoin, which requires this amount of high salability, this amount of low. And when I say low, I don't mean low enough to have coffee transactions, but I mean low enough in order for us to have an enormous global market in Bitcoin transactions every 10 minutes. Every 10 minutes, there's thousands of transactions taking place all over the world, sending massive quantities of value all over the world. If we're able to do that and the network remains extremely distributed, then I think it can offer a compelling alternative to fiat, and it can grow away from fiat. So the first thing that Bitcoin has going for it is obviously the salability across time, which I mentioned in the Bitcoin standard, but then here we also get into salability across space. And I do some comparisons of Bitcoin gold and fiat in terms of their salability across space. But then the other thing that Bitcoin has going for it, and why it fixes this so very deeply and profoundly, is because Bitcoin is not debt. Bitcoin allows us to run a monetary system which it makes sense, in which balances are positive and balances add up and reconcile, and money creation is highly controlled and highly audited and highly precise. And we're using a present good for payment settlement. We're not settling with future promises. And that's really ultimately what fiat does. And I should have mentioned this earlier in the when discussing fiat technology. Ultimately, the reason fiat technology functions is that it substitutes the government's credit for present goods. In other words, instead of settling your trade by having to move a physical good, instead of having to move a physical gold of coin from one bank to the other, you're taking the other bank's word because the other bank is guaranteed by the same central bank that guarantees you. And so effectively, we replace government's word or government's promises for present goods, because the promises have much higher saleability across space. So Bitcoin restores that balance where it gives us a thing with high saleability across space, but that's not debt. That's nobody's obligation. And that's why it's such powerful dynamite in my mind. And then I get into the implications of that on banking. I get into the implications on saving and just the problem of how fiat under, and that's something discussed earlier, how there's how it's hard to save under a fiat standard and how Bitcoin fixes this. And then in the last two chapters, we discuss, we discuss energy markets. I look into Bitcoin energy extensively and how that relates to Bitcoin security and how what effect Bitcoin has on global energy markets. And then with that, and I think the energy story is a really enormously important part of the Bitcoin story. With that, we move to the last two chapters on how Bitcoin fixes this or how Bitcoin could fail to fix this. So having laid this groundwork for analyzing Bitcoin and fiat, the last two chapters look at ways in which Bitcoin fixes all of the problems with fiat and then ways in which Bitcoin fails. And that's really going to be the final chapter of the book as it stands. So currently it's, I think, at around 22 chapters, but might end up with a few more. So what do you guys think?
I think screw the coffee is my favorite going there.
That's good.
I think that the animation you created is going to draw people into the book, because the ideas are going to, either people are interested already, they'll see how you've encapsulated it and they're going to want to go further in, or they're going to learn something and be really curious and want to go further in.
Yeah. So basically now you can just sign up to my website and subscribe to receive one chapter from this book every 2 weeks, or you can subscribe to you'll receive one chapter of this every 2 weeks, and then you'll also receive every other week you'll receive a chapter of Principles of Economics, my economics textbook. So you'll be able to get both effectively by the end of 1 year. By the end of 1 year, you will have received one chapter a week for both books. And then both books will be published around the middle of next year, I think, I'm hoping, around the time when these subscriptions are ending. So if you subscribe to saifeddin.com now, you'll get those two books delivered, and then you'll also get access to all of my online courses on saifeddin.com. I have four courses that I've been teaching on my website for the last year or so. It was Principles of Economics, the two courses on which the textbook is based, the Bitcoin Standard, which was based on the Bitcoin Standard, obviously, and then a fourth course called Hard Questions on Hard Money, which is based on this book. It's a course that was based on this book is maybe not accurate. It's more accurate to say that this book is based on that course. And so the earlier bulletins that I had written to my subscribers back in 2018 and 2019 formed the genesis of this book. So since then, I've added a lot, and this is what has given me, the current book that I have. So in that course, you'll see how my thinking has evolved around these questions over time as I've been discussing it. And so you get all of that, and you join the forum, join the Saifeddin forum, all of that in one package. For $100, as a one-time payment, or you can subscribe for $15 a month. That's really, I think, I decided to just put everything into one bundle to make it just far easier for everybody, and to just make it easy to run and to manage, and to just give people access to all of the stuff that I have. So I think it's a pretty good deal, because you could get your fill of Bitcoin and Austrian economics on 4 courses and 2 books and 1 chapter every week. If you crave this kind of stuff, you know, I think you will enjoy this. So do check it out and do sign up.
So if you're going to set up a booth at the 100K party to sell signed copies to those that are turning up?
Nah, we'll see. I think, you know, probably, I think I'm going to just, I'm going to be done with this book, I'm going to be taking a massive break from doing anything related to work, because I've been working so hard on both of those books. And, you know, it's a weird thing to write 2 books at the same time, but, inspiration is a fickle mistress, and you cannot look at her when she shows up. So you just, you know, my fingers just, run straight to the keyboard and they go there. So it's been a pretty intense couple of years with the work. So I think as soon as the physical copies are out, I'm not going to be involved with anything. As soon as these emails are out and the books are done and then the physical copies are shipped, I'm going to be taking a long break from doing any work. Well, not long, a few months, maybe even weeks, but it'll be the first long break that I've had for a long time.
We're going to have the 100K party in Timothy Allen's wood anyway.
Yes.
A quick one. I think it's really important that you talk about the strengths of fiat, because I can see, you know, if the Bitcoin standard did become prevalent, that within a few generations we would see governments or people try and push, you know, back to go back to fiat for the reasons that, you know, they can increase government spending. You know, they could well use a crisis like a war, as in the past, or a coronavirus hysteria to say, look, this is going to be a temporary measure. We need to move to, you know, some kind of fractional reserve system to safeguard our economy and keep people healthy or whatever. So talking about that now is important, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's really... I think the security of Bitcoin is highly reliant on thinking of it this way. And I think the survival of Bitcoin really can be well understood if you think about it in that sense. And that's the final chapters when I analyze Bitcoin survival. I focus on explaining it from this perspective. I think because it's the advantage that fiat has that allows it to neuter the other advantages of other forms of money, and in particular gold. So, yeah, thank you. Anybody else?
Just to say that I'm more and more looking forward to the chapter on fiat science, particularly given the year that we've had. Are you planning on adapting much of that to the recent events with the corona hysteria?
Pretty much, yes. I think, there's no shortage of things on which you could write about. There's so many examples of bad fiat science, and you can see the causality in that. You know, there's in scientific institutions, it's not the market that rewards research and promotion. It's essentially government financing and government research grants, and that effectively means that ultimately a great way of putting it is, in fiat education, you face no consequences for being wrong. You only face consequences for not getting published. And so the incentive is always to publish and not to worry about being right. And that's why we have such an enormous amount of academic research being produced and such an enormous amount of people not ever reading any of it. And so it's very, 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 very rare that anybody reads academic research and academic journals, and for very, very good reason. And the whole publication system is completely corrupt and silly. And the whole industry is distorted by government influence. But I think, you know, the things that we've seen in the corona hysteria were a very good case study. But I have two qualms about it so far. The first one is, the problem with it is that I think it might get my book censored. A lot of books have been getting censored just because they even have the words corona in them. So I don't want to have to deal with that headache. So I think what I might be doing is maybe write about something else rather than corona hysteria, and write about something, so some other story in science, and there are many, many, many. But I think another thing that I could possibly be doing is writing about corona hysteria fictionalized with all names and with all names and what was that thing? I haven't watched the movie in so many years, but they used to have this thing where they say this movie has been fictionalized, and to change the characters and to protect people's anonymity or something like that. So I might invent, I might make it a fiction chapter about an imaginary planet somewhere far away where a strange disease broke out, and then I'll have on my website, I'll have a cheat code where you can translate all of the fake words in the chapter on science. You could go to the chapter on my page and you'll see. So, you know, when I say, and then the scientist Zork did this and that, you can look up on my website and find out who Zork actually is. And you can, you know, when I want to talk about Harvard, then I don't want to mention them. So I'll just have a fake name for them. So if you have any ideas about how to do this, how to evade the censors creatively, if anybody listening here has lived under the Soviet regimes and knows what people used to do under these conditions, please share with me, because, I want to know how to navigate what is called, what do they call the Google Archipelago. If you remember you may have heard about the book, The Gulag Archipelago by
Solzhenitsyn.
Solzhenitsyn. Yeah, well, there's a professor who's written a new book called The Google Archipelago about how social media and the internet is becoming Soviet crime think institution. So, if anybody has experience of how to deal with that, how we could write about fiat science and fiat medicine without provoking the commissars at Amazon for clamping down on us, please do let me know.
Just looking that book up now. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah. I met the guy. He was at a Mises conference where I spoke a couple of years ago, Michael Rechtenwald. He was an NYU professor, and he used to be an English critical theory professor, and used to be a Marxist. And then he grew up and he just decided he's had enough of this stuff. Like I left US academia in 2009, and I'd followed from afar, but it was really up until seeing him and hearing him speak that I just got a glimpse of just how far and how bad things have become in U.S. universities. And he was hounded out of NYU, I think, and now he's writing about it. So he's a quite interesting character, worth looking into.
Just on fiat science, I'll paraphrase Nietzsche when he said, when fighting monsters, make sure you don't become a monster yourself. Do you foresee a problem in the next, 10, 15 years when you or I could fund science that might not be, entirely truthful or fiat in all but name?
No, of course. Of course, you know, Bitcoin doesn't fix human nature. The people who will do bad things will still do bad things. But the difference is that if you and I decided to start funding bad science with Bitcoin, guess what happens? We run out of Bitcoin. It's a self-correcting problem. We can't keep making Bitcoin to keep funding bad science. The problem with fiat science is that they don't run out of fiat coins. And so they just keep making more fiat coins and there's no corrective mechanism. And so there's no market test that academic institutions have to face in the fiat standard because they're all effectively, or actually I think the better way of putting it is that they've all failed the market test because they all live off of handouts. I think that's a I mean, if your university takes subsidized student loans and if university takes research grants from the government, then it has already failed the market test. And it's just, we're just waiting for Bitcoin to come and liquidate all of this fiat junk. And that's why the last section of the book is titled The Fiat Liquidator. Because all of these things that have been liquid, that have been bankrupt and have been propped up by fiat, you know, they lost the market test, but they continue to survive because fiat keeps them alive. And so, universities can't afford to be wrong for a very long time because of fiat. In a Bitcoin world, they can only afford to be wrong for as long as people are willing to willingly lose Satoshis to fund them and willingly lose Bitcoins to fund them. So, you know, eventually you're going to run out of Bitcoin. No matter how rich you are, there's only so much bullshit science you can manufacture with your coins. Eventually it dies. And if your coins were what was keeping the science alive, then eventually the coins would die. The science will die once your coins finish. But fiat fixes this. Fiat fixes this by allowing the people who finance pseudoscience to continue to finance it, because they're always devaluing the labor of the people who are productive. All right. I think this has been very helpful. Thank you everybody for joining. I will be discussing the fiat standard obviously more over the coming weeks as we start releasing the chapters. So please remember to sign up on saferdean.com and you'll be getting a weekly email with the fiat standard, with the principles of economics, and you will get full access to my 4 online courses as well as access to the saferdean.com forum. So sign up on, and then there will be a second tier where you can sign up to join the seminar as well. And in that case, you'll be able to come and join these seminar discussions, which are recorded into the podcast. So if you want to join these seminars, you can join that other tier. So look forward to chatting more with you over the coming few weeks. Thank you, everybody.